Shumrabyug.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Shalook. Shalisten, the podcast that takes a pop at culture. Shalook, Shalisten.
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 Oh, very good, Benjamin. I was going to do an under-the-sea voice, and then I realised I won't be able to do one without some sort of voice modulator. But look, we don't have time for any sort of under-the-sea messing, because we've to look at a load of stuff this week, including there's a trailer for Five Nights at Freddy's, but this time it's the official version. Also, Nicolas Cage is back, but this time in video game form. Also... we have the most exciting trailer so far for Marvel's Secret Invasion. Will this save the Disney Plus Marvel shows? Or is that a Mission Impossible? What do you think of that, Ben? That was a good segue, wasn't it?
That was very good. It was buttery smooth.
It was. I ruined it by talking about it. But we have the latest in the series of, oh, Tom Cruise, be careful, you're going to hurt yourself. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning got a trailer. And out of nowhere and apropos of nothing, a new trailer for a new movie about an AI that's a little boy that needs to be protected.
Yeah. Yeah. And Michael, if that wasn't enough, this week, everybody's favourite straw man argument in the pub, The Little Mermaid, was released, Michael. And everybody's giving out about the fact that Ariel is black. Okay. So, this week, Michael, we've decided to take a look at mermaids, where they come from, and why anybody who complains about changing a mermaid myth is wrong.
Yeah.
We looked at.
Yeah, yeah. Ben's going to tell us, are they just going to flap up out of the sea and eat you, or is there also sex?
There's no sex.
Is there no sex in mermaids? Okay. I've been misled.
Yeah.
Benjamin, you have. Scroll back up to the top there and I'll see what the first thing we're going to talk about is.
Well, Michael, I have something to talk about before we do that, because we've been threatening to do this for weeks, Michael.
Oh,
but I'm going to irritate the listeners right now.
Oh, very good. More so than usual.
More so than usual, more so than just being my normal natural self, Michael, I'm going to irritate them in a brand new way. Ladies and gentlemen, if you've been listening to this podcast for the last 5 years,
nearly six,
you may have stuck with it this long, and that probably means that you get something out of it. If you do get anything out of this podcast, and that's a big if, ladies and gentlemen, would you kindly consider giving us a review wherever you listen? You can pause this episode right now and go up to the top of the episode and give us a nail 5 stars on Spotify. Or maybe you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts. You can do it there as well. Or maybe you're listening to us on Google Podcasts. You can go do it there as well. Just go and give us a review somewhere, ladies and gentlemen.
Acast. Maybe you're listening directly on Acast.
Yeah, give us an L review. Please
do. You can do it there as well. Ma'am, you can do it anywhere, ma'am. Just do it wherever you want, whatever you're listening to it on.
There's no point in me telling my mother, she just won't get it.
No, she's in denial. She does not believe that you do a podcast.
No son of mine does a podcast.
A podcast in 2023, can you imagine? Would he not?
You're two white men. Don't be ridiculous.
Would he not set up a video and do a video podcast like that lovely young man Andrew Tate?
It's such a strong presence, that Andrew Tate.
Your mom's a big Andrew Tate fan.
Massive Andrew Tate fan.
Benjamin. Speaking of intimidating presences, we finally got a trailer for the real Five Nights at Freddy movie.
Michael, this is one of those trailers that's gone completely over my head because I'm not a gamer.
You're not a gamer. You are sometimes. It depends on what the topic of the week is. But I've seen you playing video games. I've seen you playing Zelda Breath of the Wild.
I have. I've played Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, I've seen you playing Killer Instinct.
I have. I've played Killer Instinct as well.
See,
on SNES.
All this, I'm not a gamer. You're just not a gamer when there's some sort of pressure. Or perhaps a need to answer a question. Five Nights at Freddy's, Benjamin, was an indie horror film from the an indie horror game from the 2000s, where you played a new security guard in Freddy Fassbender's Family Pizza Place Atorium.
Yeah, and, that sounds right.
Yeah, and it's one of those places that only America had. We didn't have them here, Benjamin, because when we were kids, there was no going for pizza for your birthday.
There was, Michael, a Pirate Pete's. I don't know if anyone listening remembers Pirate Pete's.
Was that in Liffey Valley?
It might have been. I'm not sure. Pirate Pete's, Michael, was a pizza place that did it for kids, like a Chuck E. Cheese over there in that America. But there were no video games.
Oh, were there animatronic pirates?
I think there might have been one animatronic pirate.
Very good.
But I'm not sure.
Well, Benjamin, you're half a generation younger than me, so you had the luxury of having that sort of thing available when you were growing up. When I was growing up, for my birthday, I got the special treat of not getting a beating that day. It was great.
Do you want to talk about this off air, or are you all right to continue?
Hopefully my mom has already given us the 5-star rating, so she can't take it back.
It's too late now.
Or else I'll get a
it's
baby.
Too late now. So Michael, Josh Hutchinson is in this.
One of your favourites. Your favourite scene in all of movies, Benjamin, where he blended himself into the rock with that cake icing.
Michael, I dream of it every night and I work it into every bit of fan fiction that I could ever do. One night, Ben went up the stairs to bed and lay down gently. Much to his surprise, Josh Hutchinson was there in full camouflage.
Who?
And a night... Josh was there in full camouflage.
Jossie H, we call him, Ben. Ben.
Jossie H.
Ben, yeah. Ben, be quiet for a second. Yeah. The problem with Five Nights at Freddy's is it's a very limited scope for a movie.
It is, yeah.
Because there's one person, they're isolated, they're looking at cameras, and it lasts 14 or 15 minutes, and then they get you. And that's kind of the game. And... it needs to be expanded upon to make an interesting movie. And this seems to be expanding on it by adding some sort of mythology, which might be in the later games, which I've never played. But there seems to be spooky children as well as animatronic robot men coming to get you.
So, Michael, we've talked about the previous kind of rip-off of the Five Nights at Freddy's film, Willy's Wonderland.
With one Nicolas Cage.
With one Nicolas Cage who doesn't do any of the speaking, Michael.
Not a word.
And what's interesting in that is that that has a mythology because it recognizes very, very quickly that the premise of a first-person horror survival game in a small arcade probably won't flesh out too well to a one-and-something-hour movie.
Mm.
So what they did was they created a sacrifice mythology behind this where the animatronics are possessed, and if they don't get their sacrifice, they'll... attack the town or some such
or something like
shenanigan.
That. But don't worry though, such. Because Nicolas Cage shows up and he kicks the shit out of them.
Yes, he kicks the shit out of the animatronics. Now, I don't know if Joshie H is going to kick the shit out of the animatronics, but there are some creepy children in there with him.
Yeah, don't know what's going on. Don't know what's going on. It feels almost like this is too late. It got beaten to its own punch by its own imitator nearly 2 years ago at this stage.
Because Five Nights at Freddy's is not the game it was, Michael. It was originally made massively popular by one Markiplier.
Never heard
on the internet.
Oh,
he's
internet?
A huge streamer, Michael.
Is he?
He's one of the largest gaming streamers going.
Would my mam be watching him?
No, she'd be watching Andrew Tate with my mam having
a cup of tea. Oh, God. Having a nice cup of tea and watching that lovely Andrew Tate fella. Benjamin!
Tea and Tate.
Benjamin. Yes. But it's not as popular now, is it not?
Well, I mean, it could be, but I don't think so. I think as you said, its ship has sailed, Michael. Mm. Its ship has sailed.
Great. Ben.
You know? Yeah.
Ben.
Yeah.
Speaking of Nicolas Cage, and speaking of horror, the most exciting and unusual thing that happened this week was the trailer for the upcoming Nick Cage expansion for the video game Dead by Daylight.
That's exactly what's happening, Michael. So, I don't know, have you played Dead by Daylight?
I haven't, but... I've watched a lot of streams, because I watch a lot of video game streamers, Ben. It's one of my favourite genres. And I've seen a lot of streams of people playing. You look genuinely confused. I don't watch a lot of video game streams. That was a little...
Actually, yeah.
A throwback joke to not knowing who Mark Plier was.
Okay. I was just like, you just said...
But I've watched a lot of YouTube videos of the game Dead by Daylight. Is it called Dead by Daylight? I think it is.
It is Dead by Daylight. Yeah.
Because it's a fascinating game and a fascinating concept. Are you familiar with it?
Yeah, so what happens in... Would you like me to explain it?
Go on,
you
go ahead. You go ahead.
Dead by Daylight, Michael, is a cooperative online game where most players are survivors and one of the players becomes the killer, the hunter, the monster, do you know the name?
Slasher. I don't know what...
The slasher.
I don't know exactly what the terminology is.
And originally when the game started, Michael, it was a generic horror trope. That would be the slasher or the killer.
Yeah, yeah. You might have like a man with a sack on his head or a dream monster or something like that.
Yeah, and I think when we look at, and what those were done were, they were a parody of the famous 80s characters like Freddy or Jason or something like that.
Yeah.
And then, Michael, very aptly, people recognized that actually this is a great opportunity to capitalize on some of our big characters. And Dead by Daylight started doing partnerships with those intellectual properties, with those IPs.
Fabulous. Can I be Freddy now?
Yeah.
Can I be Michael Myers?
Freddy now. Yeah.
Can I be Jason Voorhees?
You can, yeah.
Can I be Leatherface?
Yep, if you want to.
Can I be Scream, the Scream Man?
Absolutely.
I can be Scream. Can I be Saw?
Yes, you can, yeah.
Can I be... Who else can I be?
You can also be... They do collaborations, Michael, with popular hot horror movies and series of the time, so you can do some Stranger Things shenanigans. You can be Vecna.
Can I be Vecna? Can I be Candyman? Yeah.
You can be, I think the Candyman's in it, yeah. Oh, I think
can
you can be the Candyman.
Can I be Candyman? Who else can I be, Ben? Can I be practically any massive horror franchise hero or villain?
I think at this point, yes. And then, Michael, what they did to take that a step further was you could be one of the famous survivors, the Final Girls.
Oh.
Or the, you know, in different series. But, Michael, this is fascinating because now we have Nicolas Cage.
And I think what is most fascinating about this is... From this trailer, and just from our world's experience with Nicolas Cage, there is no way to tell if Nicolas Cage is going to be the killer or the survivor. And that is just fascinating.
How are we supposed to know, Michael? He's not playing one of his famous characters. I thought maybe it would be Mandy from Mandy.
Yeah, or the man from Willy's Wonderland.
Or the man from Willy's, Willy from Willy's Wonderland. It's not Willy. I can't remember who he plays in that. But, or I thought it might even be Dracula from Renfield.
No.
That's just come out as a tie-in. No, it's just Nicolas Cage.
You're just Nick Cage. I love the concept of the actor Nick Cage being such a terror that he's hunting down and killing people in a graveyard.
But I think the even funnier thing, Michael, is he's kind of a glam rock version of Nick Cage. If you take a look at the character that they've announced in this small trailer, he's got a real pout and some mascara on.
He's fabulous looking. He looks like if Nicolas Cage from the 90s had the style of Nicolas Cage now.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
Yeah, great.
Absolutely love it. Love every second of it. If anything can make me play this game, it will be being able to just be the actor Nicolas Cage furiously take chasing teenagers through a warehouse.
I'm buying it for that reason and that reason alone. I'll have to buy some kind of console to play it on, Michael, but I'm going to do it.
It's probably on the PC, Benjamin.
Probably on the PC, Michael, and I've got one of those because that's how we're communicating.
Speaking of Benjamin, PC gone mad. Marvel released the new trailer for Secret Invasion. I don't know. It was fine.
Let's hear that goes right down there in the bottom five segues you've ever done, Michael. Very, very interesting choice.
We've now said PC gone mad three or four times, and we keep talking about Andrew Tate. This episode is not going to get through any filters.
Or it's going to get through a lot of them, and we're going to have a really bad audience.
Oh, yay. What's wrong with them? Our mams.
Yeah, it's our mams, and they're terrible. Come here. Yeah, we got our second trailer, Michael, for Secret Invasion. Nick Cage is back. Samuel L.
No, Nick Cage is the actor.
Sorry, Nick Fury's back.
Yeah, he is, yeah. Nick Cage is also back. He was in the previous thing we talked about.
Yeah, he is, yeah. And the Super Skrull in this, Michael, is famously played by Nicolas Cage, doing his absolute best to be Nicolas Cage. No, we got our second trailer, Michael, for Secret Invasion, also known as, maybe if we bring back one of our favourite characters and we also infuse this with a bunch of British actors, people will think it's good.
Lash a load of British actors into it and hope that it's going to be popular. Ben, this trailer in particular seemed to slightly downplay the alien comic bookiness of the Skrulls, excuse me, and played up the political intrigue and mystery. This trailer definitely felt more Winter Soldier, Civil War than Endgame, post-Endgame Marvel.
I think possibly Marvel is trying to learn some lessons from Phase 4 so far. And one of the most successful points in the MCU was Winter Soldier.
Yes.
Winter Soldier was a huge transition point for the tone of how we were going to treat superheroes, for the tone of how we were going to treat S.H.I.E.L.D. and what S.H.I.E.L.D. did. And it really gave breath to the world of the MCU. And what I mean by that is superheroes became very political post Winter Soldier in the MCU. And then we had a massive departure from that, Michael, in the last couple of things, where we've attempted things like Quantumania, Thor, Love and Thunder.
I don't think they ever released that.
It never came out, did it not?
It never came out, as far as I can remember.
They also tried things like She-Hulk. And look, we've covered this extensively on the podcast, Michael, but the tone of those is nothing like The Winter Soldier. It's almost not grounded in reality at all, and leans far heavier on the snappy humor that was a characteristic of those early movies, but not a defining feature. And I think that's something that maybe Marvel forgot somewhere along the way. I know the dialogue in Marvel is a very love and hate thing for many fans, because it's very snappy and very rapid, and it goes. And for some people, it's like the Gilmore Girls in spandex. But in other aspects of it, Michael, that was never the draw in Winter Soldier or Civil War.
No.
It was an enjoyable way that characters interacted that was always grounded by really good acting and really good characterization.
Yeah. Almost, to be not derivative, reductive, kind of Winter Soldier was, this is a little bit more for grown-ups. It's got Robert Redford in it.
Robert Redford's an established spy man.
Yeah, he's an established spy man. It's got him in it. Now, it doesn't have Britain's own Olivia Colman.
Oh, it does now, though.
But it does now, so maybe this will be good.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really say, Michael. It looks like a spy thriller with aliens.
Yeah, that's all I want. All I want is a spy thriller with aliens.
That's all I've ever really asked for in my Marvel stuff, Michael. Look, bringing Samuel L. Jackson back is a good move. He's a good spy master. He's a good character within the MCU. He's very enjoyable. He seems to be their bread and butter now for the next two, because he's very heavily featured in the Ms. Marvel trailer, or the Marvels trailer.
Yes, he is.
What was
it
called?
Yeah.
The Marvels trailer.
Oh, yeah.
So
I guess he's going to survive this, so.
Because I forgot, Michael, in my head, that those were two separate things.
Yeah. So he's obviously going to survive this and end up back in space.
Or is he? Because we don't know if this is a time jump.
It's all wibbly wobbly. Asher, look,
it's all wibbly wobbly. Because he's on the space station in the Marvels trailer. Mm. That's how he meets Kamala Khan for the first time.
Yeah. Is that first, though? Maybe we've just fallen out of the loop a little bit. Maybe that happens first. Benjamin, look, it's the thing I'm most excited about in Marvel these days.
Yeah.
In fact, it's the only thing I'm excited about in Marvel these days, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I mean, Michael, I told you last week, Guardians of the Galaxy 3, I think, is it for me. Mm. I think I'm done.
Yeah.
And I know you said that you're not going to push yourself anymore to be a completionist or a completist.
Yeah.
But I'm done. I think I'm like, I've been done for a while, but this feels like a good final nail in my Marvel coffin. I'll watch Secret Invasion. If it's good, I'll keep at it, but I won't be pushing myself to finish it anymore.
Very good, Benjamin. Ben!
Yeah?
Speaking of cramming your spy drama full of British actors in the hopes of being taken more seriously, what do you think about Mission Impossible? Mission Impossible. Oh, be careful, Tom Cruise, you're getting a bit old.
Oh, Tom Cruise, give over.
Get down off there, Tom Cruise, you're going to hurt yourself.
Ah, Tom Cruise, I told you to get down from there, and now you've hurt yourself.
They've put every British person I've ever seen in this.
Yeah, so who is in this, Michael? So many things happening. Hayley Atwell, how are you doing?
There she is. She's in it. Vanessa Kirby is in
it? Yeah, Vanessa Kirby, her off the Hobbs and Shaw. Yep.
Hobbs and Shaw, exactly, yeah. Simon Pegg. Yeah.
Simon Pegg.
Yeah.
Noted British man, Simon Pegg.
Ving Rhames,
is he British?
No.
No? Okay,
he's in it,
good.
Though.
An excellent part of the list of British actors.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise, famously British.
Yeah,
played
an
American for years.
Very good accent.
Very good accent. So, Michael, this is Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning. Or Mission Impossible, How is Ethan Hunt Still Alive? Or Mission Impossible, Dead Career for Tom Cruise. It depends on which one you want to take. Now,
Tom Cruise,
I don't think it's
having an enormous resurgence, Ben. This could
be
a billion dollar movie.
He is, yeah. The Church of Scientology does him well, Michael. Does him well.
They're just showing Top Gun Maverick in every Scientology center, are they?
I think they probably are. I think he might have a 7-picture deal with them viewing rights. I think that's how he gets the numbers up. All the Scientologists go.
Yeah, they have to.
They're not bad films, in fairness. Top Gun 2 was very, very good. And the Mission Impossible, the Mission Impossible films,
Ben,
generally quite good. Yes.
Would you like to see a Mission Impossible film starring Josh Hutcherson?
Yeah, that'd be good.
It'd be easy for you to say as well.
Mission Impossible with Josh Hutcherson. Fuck's sake.
Anyway.
Fuck's sake.
Looks fine. Looks good.
That'll be grand.
Yeah. Vanessa Kirby's getting typecast as a mysterious evil British woman who knows how to fight.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of her gig. But hey, they're in big movies. It's getting her name out there. Do you know what I mean? They are big movies. Mm. But yeah, she does seem to be... I was like, oh, is Jason Statham doing a crossover?
Is he going to be in this as well?
Is he going to be in this?
His sister is in it, so is he going to be in it?
Yeah, bizarre. Bizarre. But Michael, is the... Oh, I'm going to get in trouble here.
Oh, no.
Is the gentleman that seems to be the nemesis of this film?
Yes, go on.
Is he from a previous Mission Impossible?
I've never seen that man before in my life, Ben.
Yeah, I've never seen him before. And Michael, it gave me a little whack of Javier Bardem in a Skyfall.
Yeah. Fight on a train. Mysterious man
from
the past.
He's probably going to be in a glass box at some point.
Yeah, he'll probably get some secrets out of him.
Look, it's going to be interesting to see. I think it's probably going to be quite good, Michael. The Mission Impossibles have been doing very well.
Mm.
They're quite enjoyable action films. I think the one with Henry Cavill, was that 5 or 6? Can't remember.
5?
Yeah. In this particular case, like that is peak action film and now frequently tops lists of the best action films ever.
Of recent times.
And they'll probably continue it. I think this has to be Tom Cruise's last one, doesn't it?
No, this feels like... I don't know if this is or not, but this feels like the first film of the final trilogy.
No, it is. It's part one.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
This is part one.
Of course it
yeah.
is.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I mean, they've probably done the whole film.
Yeah, but this is the trend that can hop in the bin as far as I'm concerned.
Go on.
This new trend of... This is the final episode in the trilogy. Part one of the final episode in the trilogy. And then you're stuck with 3 more films that they had one idea for.
I blame The Hobbit.
The Hobbit. Harry Potter did it.
Infinity War.
Infinity War Endgame kind of told you that it was fine to do that.
That was the first one that did it, I guess. The first one that really marked it out.
Well, the latest Fast and Furious...
Yeah, look, fuck that noise, Michael.
Anyway.
Dead Reckoning is the final nail in the coffin. That could be the aim of part. That could be the name of the one after this. Mission Impossible Final Nail.
Yeah, that'd be good, wouldn't it?
I'd watch that.
Yeah. What's next on the list? Is that it? We've gone through everything.
I don't know. I think we've finished the podcast, Michael. I think we're done. No, Michael. What we got was, Michael, AI has taken over the world.
Oh, yeah.
It's a central focus of the writer's strike currently happening in that America.
We did a whole episode on it.
You can listen to it. It's probably a bit out of date time-wise now, but it's an interesting overview of the entire strike. But one of the key sticking points, Michael, is AI is coming to take our jobs.
It's coming to take our jobs.
And a bit more of that has been revealed over the past week. And the fact, one of the key negotiations that the Writers Guild of America, the WGA, was trying to bring in was... We just want guarantees that you won't get writers to, number one, rework something from an AI, and that you won't get AI to rework stuff that writers produce.
Okay.
Which is a fair stipulation. It's
so you can have a script entirely written by an AI?
Yep. That's fine. Okay. If that's the way you want to do it, that's fine.
But you can't take John Smith's script, bang it into ChatGPT and say, polish this up for us.
Correct.
Oh, I see.
And likewise, you can't get the AI to come up with your script and then have the writers come in and finish it.
And pay them much less.
And pay them much less because they didn't come up with the idea. And they don't get residuals because it's not their idea. Yeah, does that make sense?
Because all they've done is polished up the script a bit. They haven't written it.
Exactly.
Oh.
So,
those producers, they're sneaky, aren't they?
So the thing about that, Michael, is that was one of the initial sticking points of this deal. They just said, look, just agree to that and we can move past it. And the fucking executives are like,
Yeah, but Ben, those noble executives, they're the ones who are putting their money forward. They're the ones who are taking the risk. So we would never at the podcast, Sure Look, Sure Listen, the capitalist podcast that takes a pop at socialism, we would never suggest that the people who are putting the capital forward were anything other than heroes.
Michael, you know this is Sure Look, Sure Listen, the socialist podcast that takes a pop at the capitalist narrative.
Oh, shit. Sorry, are we recording them in the wrong order this week?
Well, we put them in the wrong order this week,
shit.
Michael.
We put
them in the wrong
order.
One
for Acast and the other one for Podbean.
Yeah, we do A-B testing on our podcast to see which audience wants to be most involved with us. Neither is doing very well, so it could just be us.
Yeah, yeah. So Andrew Tate is either great or an absolute shithead, depending on what version of the podcast you're listening to.
Yeah, unfortunately, yes.
Ben, shut up anyway. The Creator is about AI. It's coming to get us. We also did an episode, Ben, about AI's coming to get us.
Yeah, Michael, we've done loads. We've been very busy.
So many podcasts. But so this many podcasts. Trailer, oh my God. So, John David Washington, Benjamin, the son of Denzel Washington from The Equalizer 3.
Yes.
He said, what I would like to be in is another obtuse sci-fi epic.
Yep. And Gareth Edwards.
Yeah, from Monster.
Creator of Rogue One.
Yeah.
Monster.
Yeah.
Monsters. And Godzilla.
Yeah. He said yeah. He said, oh yeah, no worries.
Is he from Wales?
I think he's from Wales. Isn't he from Wales?
He's from Wales. I'll have a look and see if he's from Wales.
You have a look and see if he's from Wales and I'll carry on. So he said, oh yeah, no worries. And he said, I've got a real fucking boilerplate story about AIs.
Oh, he's English.
Is he English? Oh, he's English. The absolute bastard.
He's from Warwickshire.
Oh, is that not in Wales?
No, I don't think so.
Who was I thinking of then? Rian Johnson. I don't know. I was thinking of Rian
Johnson.
Rian
Johnson.
what are we doing Welsh
Who's with? American?
Is he? Who's Rian from Wales?
Johnson. Hang on.
Tom Jones is from Wales.
Are you thinking of David Bowie's son?
No. He's not from Wales. He's from David Bowie. He's from space.
David Bowie is from Wales.
Is David Bowie from Wales?
Rian Johnson is American. David Bowie is from Wales.
David Bowie, the singer, songwriter, and performer David Bowie is from Wales. Is that what you're trying to tell
me? Hang on. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Get out of here. David Jones.
Yeah, that was his name originally.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, you check if David Bowie is from Wales or not. And I
No, he was born in Brixton, London.
Of course he was. He's from Wales. Imagine if David Bowie is from Wales. The world we'd live in would be so different.
Do you know who is from Wales? Michael Sheen.
Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Anthony Hopkins.
Yes, all great Welsh actors. Fabulous.
I'm from Wales.
Christian Bale.
I avoided the mines. Christian Bale from Wales.
Yeah, very good.
It's in the name.
Very good actor from Wales.
In the name.
What are we doing? What is happening?
Ladies and gentlemen, we do apologise. We're getting a new AI versus the humans movie.
Yes, huzzah! And I tell you what, Ben, John David Washington, the first half of this trailer, I was like, ooh, this looks good. AI has taken over a bit like Skynet, and the humans are fighting back a bit like Terminator. And that sounds like it's going to be good, but it's not set in a post-apocalyptic wasteland. It's set in the world where humans might be about to win and turn it around.
Yeah, but I think one of the interesting things that we're seeing here, Michael, is it's conflating two issues together. So on a surface level, I think for this, we have a little bit of a classic AI is coming to take our jobs.
Yeah.
How could they?
Mm.
But I think on a deeper level, we might have a bit of a January 6th go woke, go broke vibe from the humans.
I don't know what that means, Ben.
I got a distinct feeling that the humans are pushing against progress and keeping the AI down. They're hunting the AI to extinction more out of a fear of something that's different as opposed to the AI being an issue in the first place.
So we're the baddies.
We're the baddies in the sense that, you know, the humans are the insurrectionists of January 6th, so to speak.
I still don't know what that means. I don't know what that's
raging against
to.
Woke America, Michael.
Benjamin, I don't
America.
Know what January 6th is in reference to. Was it some sort of event? I'm not being
yes,
facetious
there was a,
here.
There I, was I'm, a large event in the United States on January 6th, 2022, where a group of Donald Trumpites...
Yes.
2021... took the capital.
Oh,
of the
I do
States.
Know about that. I didn't know that was referred to as January 6th. I don't care about it American is. Politics, Ben. I don't give a shit.
Nor should you, Michael, except that it influences most of the major narratives that you consume.
Is that what this is then? So the
I don't know.
The AIs are the immigrants.
The AIs are the immigrants coming to take our jobs.
And they come to take our jobs. Yeah. I tell you what, Ben, they had me at the start, and then it turned out to be about the AI was a little boy, and I completely lost interest. I've seen that.
Michael, one of our first ever podcasts on our other podcast, Collecting Issues, the bi-weekly comic book book club that no longer records at the moment because we're focused on this, was on Descender, which is a comic book set in the future about a little AI boy who's revolutionary and everybody wants to kill.
Yeah, one of my favorite ever films about AI was the film AI, which was a film about an AI who was a little boy. That everybody wanted to get.
Yeah, Jude Law was a gigolo.
Yeah, Jude Law was a gigolo. And Haley Joel Osment was the little boy, I think.
Was the little boy. Yeah, so we got a little bit of that, Michael. And it looked good at the start. It had me. I was like, oh, this looks kind of good. It still looks kind of good. But I'd say it has the potential to be very messy, Michael. I think we're going to get a lot of monologuing about the nature of humanity. I don't like the title, The Creator. It feels highfalutin to me. It feels like Christopher Nolan got a smell of his own farts again and went, oh, that's good.
I thought it was going to be about Walt Disney.
Yeah, that'd be good, wouldn't it?
I don't know why. The title doesn't say anything to me about AI insurrection or robots coming to get us. But I tell you, Ben, one of the most disappointing things about The Creator being a movie about AIs is I find it very hard to get engaged with a story about AI or robots or, you know, artificial intelligence in general without Gemma Chan playing a robot.
I know, Michael, one of the things that really takes away from a robot film for me is a lack of Gemma Chan.
If Gemma Chan's not in it being a robot, Ben, then what's the point in having your AI film?
Well, wait, hang on, Michael. Hang on.
Go on.
I'm getting a report. Hold on.
Oh, is it coming in on a telegram?
Gemma Chan is in fact in this film.
Oh, very good. Okay. Does she play a robot who's an AI? I hope she does.
She'd better. She doesn't. I won't watch it. She doesn't. I won't watch it.
I won't watch it if she's not being a robot. She's always in AI stuff, Ben. What's going on there? Has she been typecast?
Gemma Chan won't be anything that doesn't have robots in it.
Yeah.
She's not interested.
She was in, what was the British one? Was it called...
Humans,
robots?
I think.
Humans.
No, it was called Humans.
She was in Humans. She was in Transformers. She was a robot. She was in, big spoilers coming for The Eternals, but she was a robot in The Eternals.
The Eternals are robots.
The Eternals are robot AIs. Gemma Chan's always AI. Maybe the English actress Gemma Chan is AI.
I don't know. We'll have to ask her.
We'll get her on the podcast, Benjamin. We'll ask her.
We'll get her on the podcast. Can you imagine if we did one day, Michael, just ask a celebrity to be on the podcast and they're like, yeah.
Sound, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Sound, yeah.
Gemma Chan. Sound, like, can I bring my husband Jack Whitehall?
You know? Is she married to Jack Whitehall?
I don't know. I don't even know who Jack Whitehall is. I think
Jack Whitehall is the English comedian. Very interesting pulling out of the hat, Michael.
I think it might be true, though.
I think it might be true now as well, but only because you put that in my head. Gemma Chan, if you're listening to this, or if you're an omnipotent AI that's monitoring all communications, come on and be on the podcast. Come on.
Tell us about being married to or not being married to the English comedian and actor Jack Whitehall.
Yeah, absolutely. Let us know if you'd like that to happen or if it has happened.
Yeah. Are you spending a lot of time together or are you at home alone all the time because he's out shilling for Bira Moretti or whatever?
Because that's apparently what Jack Whitehall does in Mick's mind.
Is that him? Is he in that?
He's a Bira Moretti shill.
Yeah.
No, come here to me, Michael.
What?
Speaking of going woke or going broke...
Oh, were we?
Yeah. This week, Michael.
Oh, yes, the controversy.
This week, Michael.
What is it?
We have the release of The Little Mermaid, Michael. The live-action remake of The Little Mermaid, directed by Rob Marshall.
Yes.
Starring Halle Bailey.
Yes.
Jonah Huer King.
Never heard of him.
Melissa McCarthy.
I have heard of her.
And Javier Bardem. Now, Michael, it's not out yet. At the time of recording, it's the 22nd of May, 2023. It will be out in 4 days on May 26th, 2023. But we said to ourselves, Michael, my goodness, there's an awful lot of kerfuffle here about the fact that the young lead actress of this particular film is black.
I hadn't noticed, Ben.
I did. Well, famously, you and I, Michael, don't see colour and are not allowed to drive. But in this, Michael, people are losing their fucking minds about this. To which many people have said, and rightfully so, in my opinion, it's a fucking cartoon. Get over it. It's fine. It doesn't matter. It's probably going to be rubbish because all the live action films are fucking rubbish.
Yeah.
Nobody lost their mind, Michael, when Will Smith played the genie.
I'm sure some people did.
They probably did. There's racists everywhere.
There's racists everywhere, Ben. They're crawling out of the woodwork.
Unless you're listening to the other version of podcasts, in which case I will say, thank God there's racists everywhere. Huh?
Keeping that woke in check.
And keep that woke in check. Yeah, that sounds about right. Keep it in check. But come here to me, Michael. We said to ourselves, let's take a look at mermaids and let's see if they're supposed to be white in mythology and fiction.
Fucking specifically not what we said. Just to make that clear. Just in case you are about to go down that avenue for 35 minutes, that is not what we said. I will be amused if that's where we're going for the next half hour, but it is not what we said.
That is not where we're going. Okay. That is not where we're going, my friend. Okay. But we said we'd take a look at mermaids. We took a look at the mythology, the folklore surrounding mermaids, and we take a look at, you know, how often we've seen them in films and movies and TV and that kind of thing. So that's what we said we'd do.
Yeah, we said we'd do a real deep dive on mermaids.
Is that what we're calling? What we're calling this episode?
I think so.
Yeah,
I think so.
Deep dives on mermaids. Yeah, I like it. Good. I like it. Solid. Good work all round from the lads.
So we put up a poll.
We did. Yeah, we love polls here at the podcast.
We love polls at the podcast. We put up a poll on Mondays and we said, "Who's going to win in this deep sea battle, Ben?"
Yeah.
Who's going to rise to the top, and who's going to go sink to the depths?
We gave people some fairly simple choices, Mark. We gave them the Little Mermaid, original Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
1980s version.
Yeah.
We gave them Namor.
No.
From
not
Marvel
Namor,
Comics.
Ben.
And MC Kwan.
El Niño Sin Namor.
Is that why he's called Namor in Black Panther 2?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's so dumb.
No.
Yeah, that's why he's called Namor.
The child without love.
Because the conquistadors meet him and he kills them or something. And they're like, this is El Niño Sin Namor.
Sin Namor.
And then I took Namor to be the name from my oppressors.
I'm so glad I didn't watch that film. come here to me.
Yeah.
The next one we asked him was, Michael, what about Aquaman? Or, as you so eloquently put it, Arthur.
That's his name.
Arthur, that's his name.
That's the man's name.
Or, Michael, the other vote that we gave was Ursula, the villain of The Little Mermaid 1, or a 90s drag queen, which, let's be honest, spot on.
Yeah, well, an 80s drag queen, I realised after posting it, because I didn't realise that the original Little Mermaid had come out in 1989, not
1989, Michael.
And to nobody's surprise, Ben, Ursula absolutely ran away with the poll.
Ran away with it, Michael. Ran away with it. 69% in favour of the 90s drag queen, 5% for Arthur, 5% for the Little Mermaid, and 4 votes, or 21% of the vote, for El Niño Sin Amor.
El Niño Sin Amor.
Which I will never tire of saying now.
Yeah.
So, look, I think it's no surprise that Ursula probably ran away with this, Michael. Ursula is an absolute classic villain. And probably the first big villain in the Disney resurgence, the Disney animated renaissance.
Yes.
And I think famously, Michael, when we look at that character, she's the first queer-coded success story for the Marvel animated renaissance. When we look at the villains from that era, they're all queer-coded.
Go on.
And what I mean by that is they're all given the characteristics that we would later apply to queer culture or something like that. So I think it's quite, I doubt you did this on purpose, Michael, but calling her a 90s drag queen is actually fairly on the money.
No, I did do it on purpose, Benjamin.
Good friend, okay.
Good friend of the podcast, Sean, was in contact with me the last time we talked about Ursula in passing.
Yeah.
And told me that Ursula was based on a very specific 80s drag queen.
Go on.
And I can't find the name. So there's people out there who know this and they're screaming at the radio saying, it's bloody that drag queen, the one everyone knows, and I've completely forgotten it. But I'll tell you next week. But apparently, yeah, based very specifically on a very specific popular drag queen from the 80s.
It's Divine.
Divine,
the drag queen,
yes.
Divine.
Yes.
Based very specifically on the drag queen Divine. And Divine was an absolutely huge performer from Baltimore in the United States, who came to prominence through the legendary filmmaker John Waters, Michael.
Oh, John Waters, very good. Baby face.
Yes, and kind of very influential on drag culture as a whole throughout the 1970s and early 80s.
Probably in America only, though, because we would have known Dame Edna Everage.
We had a very, I suppose we would have been exposed to a very different form of drag in the form of people like Lily Savage and Dame Edna Everage.
Yeah.
We would have had a very different upbringing in that type of drag. But yeah, in the United States, it was very much driven by Divine. But it started a wave, Michael, of queer-coded villains. And what I mean by queer-coded villains was they were given the characteristics traditionally considered effeminate, and they would be applied to male characters, specifically characters like Scar.
Ew.
Who has a very long, drawled, Shakespearean camp vibe.
I'm going to throw you off of this cliff.
Yeah, a little bit like that. Michael actually did a little eyelid flutter there. And I'm sorry to say that we don't record this podcast visually because that would have been spectacular. But also Jafar, Michael.
No! Until I get my hands on this lamp.
And for us, Michael, those are panto villains.
Mm, yes.
And that long tradition of queer coding is a kind of panto villain thing for us.
Benjamin, what's this got to do with mermaids?
It's got nothing to do with it, Michael. This should be an episode all its own. So we're going to leave it to that, Michael.
Leave it at that. Tell us about mermaids.
This should be an episode all its own and we'll take a look at it another time. But anyway, we got into mermaids, Michael, and I took a dig into where mermaids come from. So I said, Michael, that we'd start with Ben. Yes.
The fucking ocean.
The ocean. You have to start with the ocean. We're talking about mermaids, Michael.
Yeah, you said, where do mermaids come from? The fucking ocean, Ben.
The
everyone knows
fucking
that.
Ocean.
Unless they're river mermaids. What are you talking about?
You do get those, but they're a little bit... All right. That was hurtful. That's been... Ladies and gentlemen, you can vote in the next poll down there. But has that been brewing a while? Do you think Michael's been holding up to that one for a while? Because, my goodness, that came out with a ferocity that I was not expecting, Michael.
Fuck you and your river mermaids, you bastard.
You and your highfalutin river mermaids. Get out of here. So, Michael, I took a look. At the lads and lasses under the sea, and I said to myself, "Oh, we'll take a look at this, and we'll see where it all comes from." Because Michael, all cultures have a mermaid myth of one sort or another, but the one that has come to be,
are you telling me that the Maasai culture of Central Africa have a mermaid myth?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I am.
Oh, very good.
Yes, I am. So, Michael, come here to me. Come here to me. Come here to me. When we take a look at different mermaids, the one that has come to define the Western perception of a mermaid, and this is very important, the Western perception of a mermaid and the one that inspired the 1989 film The Little Mermaid is Hans Christian Andersen's tale, The Little Mermaid.
Benjamin, I'm so sorry to do this, but you've shared your notes with me so I can have a vague idea of where you're going.
Yeah.
And that's really good for the flow of the podcast.
Yeah.
But you've really made me laugh. With the use of a reduced relative clause in one of your points here, and I'm just going to read it out word for word because it's the funniest sentence I think I've ever seen. So, do you mind if I skip ahead a little bit?
Yeah, go on.
Today, most scholars agree that Andersen, a rumored bisexual, wrote the story. That's one of the best sentences I've ever seen. It's fucking spectacular. I would love to be referred to as Mick, a rumoured bisexual, hosts the podcast.
Well, we can't. We, I can't fully quantify that, Michael, because it's very hard to find the actual source, and the man himself is dead.
Okay.
So it's a little bit, but according to rumor or hearsay at the time, a bisexual.
Oh. A rumored bisexual,
Michael, which is quite frankly how many of us identify these days, Michael.
A rumored bisexual.
It covers all bases, Michael. You're safe.
You're safe, yeah.
Benjamin, co-host of the podcast, a rumored bisexual. quite often does the research bit of the podcast.
Fucking great.
I'm glad you've enjoyed that, Michael. I feel like an idiot now.
Sorry,
but well.
No, tell us about the mermaids.
Moving on from there, probably where we get a lot of our Western perception of mermaids, Michael, is from The Little Mermaid. And The Little Mermaid was written by Hans Christian Andersen in 1837, Michael.
Not that long ago.
So a fairly modern interpretation of a mermaid for a creature that's been around millennia, Michael. You know, fairly up to date. Mm. So, in that, it follows the traditional story of the Little Mermaid. Mermaid falls in love with a human, goes to a sea witch, gets a potion, goes up to the surface. But there are some major diversions from the Disney-fied version of that, Michael. Number one, in the Disney version, Ursula takes Ariel's voice through magic. Takes it away.
Yeah.
And it's a sequence, it's a little sparkly sequence, and she keeps it in a little glass bottle and she puts it up on a shelf, which is very magical and good, Michael. In Hans Christian Andersen's version, she just cuts out her tongue.
Ugh.
And keeps the tongue.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's awful. And then she transforms her tail into two legs and she goes up onto the shore and she falls in love with the prince. But the prince in this, Michael, is a real bastard.
He goes, ugh, she hasn't even got a tongue. Gross.
And he has his wicked way with her, Michael. And then he leaves her for another woman.
Oh, classic men.
Yeah, and so the end of The Little Mermaid in Hans Christian Andersen's 1837 version is her contemplating, first of all, murdering the prince.
Right.
And then she commits suicide. She takes her own life.
Oh, bloody hell, Hans Christian Andersen.
She completes suicide and takes her own life. Mm. And many people believe this to be Hans Christian Andersen's way of working through his own rejection by a man, Edward Colden.
Hmm.
And it's his kind of outpouring of feeling around that issue in a coded story, because open rumored bisexuality or not was not accepted back then. Yeah, so very interesting. But mermaids themselves, Michael, are abundant in culture.
Cultures
around the world. They're everywhere, Michael. Everywhere. And we'll go straight to the one that you were talking at. Now, unfortunately, Michael, you said the Maasai tribe of Central Africa, and you're right. They probably didn't worship this particular mermaid goddess in the same way. But this is a West African goddess, and her name is Mami Wata, or Wata, Mami Wata. I'm not sure how to pronounce that one correctly. And she is a water spirit linked to fertility, lust, and wealth, and is quite often depicted as a mermaid being wrapped around by an anaconda.
Oh, like Nicki Minaj.
Like Nicki Minaj, Michael. Very good. And so in this particular case, Michael, she's quite a popular figure. So when we look at other examples, Michael, there are many, many other examples from around the world. In Indonesia, they have another water spirit, Nyai Roro Kidul. And if anybody from Indonesia listens to the podcast, you can absolutely welcome to write in and correct my dreadful pronunciation.
Please do.
Please do.
And tell
Please
us what
do.
You think of Andrew Tate.
Tell us what you think of Andrew Tate. And relative clauses in the wrong places.
No, it was in the right place.
It was in the right place. It's
perfectly,
just
perfectly grammatically correct sentence, Ben. It was just one of the funniest sentences I've ever seen. Hans Christian Andersen, comma, a rumored bisexual, comma, great, fabulous, great grammar, wonderful grammar, just a brilliant sentence.
So once again, Michael, the theme is established that this Indonesian version of the character is associated with fertility and reproduction.
Oh.
So not reproduction now, Michael, in the sense of making something again. Making babies, Michael.
Oh,
making
babies.
Yeah, and I'll explain that to you on another podcast.
Mm.
But, yeah. So that's where that comes from. Those two are fairly popular depictions in mythology. We have some here in the Celtic region, Michael. We have Scotland and Ireland has Selkies.
And Wales.
which and Wales, alongside David Jones, noted Wales denier David Jones, also known as David Bowie.
Yeah.
So in this particular case, Michael, Selkies are a little bit different. They are mer people that transform into seals and then can transform back, as opposed to the giant fishtail myth that we've seen traditionally. Most of the mythological figures that I have described to you before, Michael, are fishtailed. And that is the traditional way that we view the mermaid. And that's the exact same in Japan, where they have a creature called a ninyo.
Okay.
And I know I pronounced that wrong. A creature similar to a mermaid depicted in folklore and believed to bring good fortune and protection at sea.
So hold on a second. Are mermaids good or bad?
Well, that's an excellent question, Michael. So,
oh, thank you.
The first ever mermaid that we kind of encounter, and they're in written language, the way that we look at it, Michael, is Atargatis. Or she's a fertility goddess. So fertility and mermaids go together. They are tied together as a concept. And she is the first mermaid in written records. She was described by the Greek historian Diodorus. There we go. Diodorus Siculus in the first century BCE. And she possessed the face of a woman and otherwise the entire body of a fish.
Ah.
Okay, which is very unusual, Michael. Here's a very funny depiction of it. You can't see it, ladies and gentlemen, but what the artist has basically done, Atargatis was a giant, or giantess, it depends on what way you look at it. And she had a giant fishtail in some depictions. But you'll notice, Michael, that there are no breasts on this particular character.
No breasts and a little pair of leggies sticking out the bottom.
And a little pair of leggies sticking out the bottom. So some bizarre medieval representation of Atargatis. But it was noted by many classicists that Atargatis is a sexless being. Mm. And she has an androgynous blend of physical qualities. So that was a big departure from what we see these days, Michael. And especially in more modern mythologies. Because mermaids are heavily tied to fertility and therefore are very feminine in their description.
Very sexy.
Very sexy indeed, Michael. Very sexy indeed. And the more modern mermaids that we encounter, and kind of the beginning of... I spelled mermaid wrong there in the second one, which is very funny.
Very good. That's okay. No one can see it. You don't need to worry.
Yeah, no one can see it. A maid of the mer, if you will. But Greek mythological creatures known as sirens were described as half bird, half woman, or fish-tailed. So this is where we get into the interesting world, Michael, of what the heck is a siren and what the heck is a mermaid?
The legends kind of overlap a little bit. And
they
a
do.
Lot of their powers... in a... He's got a table, ladies and gentlemen! There's a bloody table!
I've made you a table, Michael.
Oh, this is wonderful.
Because I thought it was a pretty good question. What the heck is the difference
between
mermaids and sirens? Well, number one, sirens are Greek.
Okay.
It is Greek mythology, and mermaids have various mythologies and folklores attached to them.
Okay.
Which is what we've already seen. In the appearance, it's part bird, part woman, but a creature of the sea. And in mermaids, it's part human, part fish.
Right.
But a siren is almost exclusively a woman.
Okay.
In modern depictions. However, it's interesting to note that in some translations of Homer's Odyssey, the sirens are male-faced with female voices and bird parts.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a harpies?
No. So that's both. It depends on which one you take a look at. So voices are enchanted with beautiful singing, and they have melodious voices for mermaids. So mermaids and singing go together, much like sirens and singing. The nature of sirens, however, is dangerous and malevolent.
Okay.
They want to ruin you. Okay? Yeah. Whereas most often, mermaids are depicted as generally benevolent or curious.
Oh.
So their intent generally with sirens is to lure sailors to their death. That's what they're there to do. They lure sailors to their death on the rocks by making you steer off course, crash your vessel into the rocks, and then they devour you.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, it's my ideal Friday night, Michael, but for some people it was very, very bad.
Oh, sailor.
Ooh, sailor. And then in other cases, mermaids would often aid or rescue humans.
So hold in different on a minute. Cases. Sirens are basically what Greek sailors made up when they were drunk as shit and crashed the boat. And they're like, oh, it was sirens, Autolycus. I swear. Yeah.
There are several thousand kind of guesses as to where mermaids come from in terms of human error. But, you know, sirens are a great way for sailors to turn around and be like, oh, we crashed the boat. Oh, because of those pesky sirens.
Definitely sirens. Yeah. But mermaids sirens. Are, like, Ben, part human, part fish, melodious voices, generally benevolent, sometimes aid or rescue humans, beautiful, enchanting. That's dolphins. You've just described dolphins.
Precisely. So dolphins and whales, Michael, number one, are known for helping humans on occasion.
We keep coming back to whales.
When they whales, bloody whales. Generally speaking, Michael, dolphins are quite helpful to humans.
Yeah, sometimes they're a bit creepy, but yeah, generally.
A lot of the time they're a bit creepy. But, you know, most of the time they actually can be quite helpful. There's a lot of debate on whether or not sailors would just get incredibly horny at sea and then mistake.
At those sexy dolphins.
mistake forms in the water for something else. But in general, in folklore, they're associated with shipwrecks, is what sirens are. And then mermaids are very much associated with underwater kingdoms. However,
that's
Michael.
Interesting. Go on.
You would be forgiven in modern depictions for mistaking the pair. Because what quite often happens in modern depictions of mermaids is a complete overlap. Mermaids are underwater creatures that lure men to their death,
Benjamin,
under the waves.
I watched 2011's Pirates of the Caribbean 4 or 5 on Stranger Tides. Yeah, it's not. Dead Man's Chest. I can't really remember what it's called. The one with the flipping mermaids in it.
Pick a pirate pun.
The one with Lovejoy. He's Captain Lovejoy. And his
that means nothing
is
to
Penelope
me.
Cruz.
Ian
Lovejoy,
McShane, Penelope
Ian
Cruz,
McShane,
Javier Bardem.
Yes, that one.
Or is that the following one?
No, it's that one. That's the one where they have to get the mermaids. And the best scene in that entire movie is when they're trying to catch a mermaid.
Yeah.
And they send a bunch of lads out on a little boat and say, here,
not
go
a smart
out there
move.
In that boat and the mermaids will come and get you. But then we'll get the mermaids. And it's the best scene in the film. It's the only memorable scene in that entire movie. That, the rest of that movie is an absolute mess. But there's an absolutely fantastic scene where there's a couple of sailors in a little rowboat out in a bay. And they've been there for ages, and suddenly a beautiful young woman swims up beside them and tries to lure them in for a kiss.
It's Amanda Seyfried, isn't it?
Is it Amanda Seyfried? It's someone who looks like Amanda Seyfried. I don't know if it is Amanda Seyfried, but it, Ben, I tell you what, to use the terminology of the modern world, which, you know, I love to do on the podcast, all the other mermaids start popping up out of the water, Ben, and they're all tens.
They're all tens.
They're all tens.
A shoal
Ben.
Of
they're all,
tens.
They're all looking very snatched.
Yeah.
Very multicultural, though. Very multiracial. Something for everyone in The Mermaids. But they take a horrific turn in Pirates of the Caribbean, where once they've almost lured the men under the water, they reveal that they've got horrible, pointy, sharp teeth, and they're much more shark-like and predatory than we were led to believe. And they start attacking and trying to eat everyone. Now, they're kind of useless. It kind of takes a lot of the tension out of it because it turns out to be a trap to catch a mermaid. And the mermaids end up on the worse side of it.
And they get caught.
Exactly. Well, one of them gets caught and then she falls in love with Orlando Bloom or something. I don't know or care about it.
It's Orlando Bloom's son.
Yeah, it might be Orlando Bloom's son. Orlando Blossom. But
very good. That entire subplot is lifted from an ancient mermaid myth.
Get out of here. And by get out of here, I mean don't get out of here. Tell me.
Tell me more. So that's based on, and we've done a whole episode on this as well, Michael, on Ondine.
We watched we watched Ondine the movie a few weeks ago.
We watched Ondine the movie by Neil Jordan weeks ago, Michael, and that's based on a very famous European myth of Ondine or Undine. The mythological water spirit in European folklore. So this particular myth comes from the Middle Ages, Michael, and she's portrayed by she's often portrayed as a water nymph or a mermaid-like creature. Mm. And the one that this lifted the subplot from for Pirates of the Caribbean was the novella Undine by a Frenchman. Friedrich de la Motte Fock.
Is that really his name?
That's his name.
Fock is the French word for seal.
There you go. Friedrich de la Motte seal. And that was published in 1811, Michael. Very interestingly, before Hans Christian Andersen's 1813
version. Very interesting. And yeah. Were mermaids good or bad in that?
So they are soulless, but it is left up to the viewer to decide whether they are good or bad. One of the central themes of Ondine is, well, the plot is that she falls in love with a knight, a human knight. She comes to the surface, falls in love with a human knight. And the central theme of the story is that this knight, who is chivalrous and good, wants to be with this creature who has no soul. And that's one of the big themes of the story. And that's the way that it's, look, it's been adapted numerous times, Michael, literature, opera, art forms. But the most notable one is a famous opera called Ondine by Hans Werner Heinz, or Henze, and the film Ondine by Neil Jordan. So those are the two that we've seen the most. But it's one of the early ones, and it's directly what inspires the strange mermaid subplot of Pirates of the Caribbean.
Get out of here, Ben.
Yeah.
Mermaids these days are either like figures of comedy or figures of horror. And it really is a blurring of the lines between mermaids and sirens and all the rest of them, isn't it?
I think, you know, it's interesting that you say the blurring of the lines, Michael, because that is fundamentally what mermaids represent. They're a very liminal creature. And what I mean by that is they are an in-between state creature. And it's probably quite fitting that they belong in the ocean, a massive body of fluid, because they are so fluid, Michael.
Oh.
I think, you know, they come to embody, as all myths do, Michael, many different things. One of them is a fear of the ocean and what happens in the ocean. Very often, because of their heavy ties to fertility, lust, and romance, it probably represents a sailor's wife's anxieties about what sailors do in different ports.
Oh, fucking.
Falling in love. Yeah, fucking, Michael, yeah. And they quite often blur together. But one of the big things is that they're quite often genderless. You know, mermen and merwomen are a big feature of a lot of different things. And they've become this massive depiction of the ocean and what lies beneath. And they've become very popular in that regard. But we see them all over modern culture as well, Michael. Sure, anytime you get yourself a bloody Starbucks...
There she is.
There she is. There's an owl mermaid. There is an owl mermaid, Michael. It's right there. They've become a massive part of that, and they've been in numerous TV shows and things, including, but not limited to, Splash, which is an absolute classic.
With Daryl Hannah.
With Daryl Hannah and Thomas Hanks.
One of the best ones, Ben.
One of the best ones. No joke. One of the best ones.
I think we watched it for this podcast years ago, did we?
We did. We did. One of our early episodes was on Splash with Daryl Hannah and Tom Hanks. Before we did, we called it Exhumed. We used to just watch stuff like that occasionally. And yeah, so we've seen a few of those, Michael. And unfortunately, Splash is probably the best example of a live-action mermaid film that we've had. And that has inspired some bizarre spin-offs as a result of that, Michael. Have you ever seen H2O Just Add Water?
Yes.
This is a bizarre show that was on Nickelodeon, and it featured three young ladies, Michael.
Yes.
It was set in Australia.
Oh, blooming Australians.
Blooming Australians. There they are there, Michael, on your screen. So there's the three
whales
girls.
Of the Southern Hemisphere.
The whales of the Southern Hemisphere, Michael.
Oh, no, that's New Zealand, isn't it? That's New Zealand.
Yes, it is. Yeah, well, you have New South Wales.
Yeah.
Anyway,
three young ones.
Anyway, these are the three young ones, Michael, and they're going to college, and they've been transformed into mermaids, not by birth or genetics, but they swam into a cave on a full moon once, and they got the powers of mermaids.
Oh, what sort of adventures did they get up to?
Michael, they get up to ridiculous adventures, because anytime a drop of moisture touches their skin, they transform, and it causes all kinds of hijinks, Michael, with the local lads and lasses at the local high school. Because anytime even a fraction, Michael, of moisture hits them, they grow their big long tail and they get trapped in the middle of whatever shenanigan they're in the middle of. And it's ridiculous because it takes nothing into account from bloody moisture in the air or sweat or anything like that. It has to be external water touching them. But it doesn't matter where it hits the microbe. It doesn't matter if it's a microbead. They transform into these creatures. And there's all kinds of adventures about their lives and whether or not they want to stay mermaids or not be mermaids. Or there's all kinds of shenanigans, Michael.
I always feel sorry for actors who have to do extended periods of being in shows about
mermaidry,
the beach or mermaidry. Their skin must be so dry.
So dry, Michael.
They're just being salty all the time.
Chlorinated or salty all the time. Those are your choices. Those are your choices. Yeah. I mean, H2O just add water is kind of the tip of the iceberg, Michael. But we've had a lot of dodgy mermaid media over the years. And it's because they're very hard to bring to life comfortably, and they're very hard to disassociate from the likes of The Little Mermaid, the Disney movie. They are associated with like bright kitsch colors and that kind of thing, and cheerful, happy stuff. That's kind of how it works. There are a few horror movies now in a modern sense, Michael. We're getting a few more horror mermaids. But as you said, that's a strange amalgamation of sirens and mermaids.
We could do a whole episode on horror mermaids sometime.
We probably will eventually, Michael. We probably will. But until then, Michael, we shall have to make do with The Little Mermaid starring Halle Bailey.
And H2O just out of water. Ben, I asked on the Discord today where folks can hop up on. I could ask people what's their favourite mermaid in pop culture. And I left pretty late, so we only got a little sparse few responses. But Old Man Cadwell said P.T. Barnum's Fiji Mermaid.
I have no idea what that is, Michael.
The Fiji Mermaid, Benjo, was a very famous mermaid of pop culture where circus acts would often stitch... Oh, you've gone. That's unfortunate. Ben, you left the meeting.
I left the meeting, Michael. I'm sorry.
P.T. Burnham's sorry. Fiji Mermaid. So, okay, look, we have to do it behind the scenes here. Ben left the meeting, ladies. He closed down the Google.
Do you know why?
You were trying to close
I typed Fiji Mermaid into the fucking tab and I hit enter before I switched tabs.
Very good. The Fiji Mermaid, Benjamin, was a famous circus sideshow creature, usually made from stitching together the top half of a monkey and the bottom half of some sort of fish.
Very disturbing.
Gross and terrifying. And featured in one of the best episodes of X-Files called Humbug. And Stephen Cadwell, Dr. Old Man Cadwell, told us about that. And Gwambi Guy, one of our more recent joiners of the Discord, said there's an episode of Futurama about the sunken city of Atlanta.
Yeah, Fry falls in love with him.
Yeah, yeah. Not Atlantis, Ben. Atlanta. Great stuff.
Atlanta. Yeah, yeah. Atlanta sinks in the south of America. That America. Yeah, it's a whole thing. Ladies and gentlemen, what are your favourite examples of mermaids in pop culture? Get in touch with us in a few different places and let us know. You can find us on the interwebs at www.seomrabeag.com, SEOMRABEAG.com.
It means tiny room in Irish.
It does indeed. You can find us on Instagram at SherlockShellistenPodcast, where we have many funny reels.
Some funny reels and some insightful reels.
Some insightful reels. We're very insightful, ladies and gentlemen. Very insightful. I don't know why I'm slightly German at the end of the podcast, but that's how it's going to go. Ladies and gentlemen, you can also find us on TikTok if you're so inclined. We're on Sherlock Should Listen Podcast.
Yeah, I've heard.
And ladies and gentlemen, the best way to get in touch with us is to hop up on that Discord, and you too might be mentioned at the end of a pod.
And if that isn't enticement enough, I don't know what is.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm off to have a swim and go looking for some mermaids. Hopefully not a Fiji one. Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody. It was very nice to mermaids.